Pitchvision My Coach Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampat from Australia. For this week, we've decided to do things a little differently. We've decided to go back and revisit one of the interviews from the archives. And for this interview, David interviewed the sports nutritionist, Dr. John Baratti. So why have you decided to pick this one up out of the archives, David?
Well, the main reason is it's a really, really good interview. And I did it when I was running the site separately at harrowdrive.com, which is now changed to pitchvision.com. And when we moved the site over, for some reason or another, the podcast interview itself didn't move over. So even though the link is still there, if you try and download it, you can't download it. So
yeah.
Because it's such a good interview, I decided that we'll put it back up again, so you can hear it again. The only downside of it is the quality of the audio isn't quite as good as the newer podcasts, because the equipment I had back then wasn't quite as good. So do bear with us with the quality, but I think it's worth it for the information that you get out of it. He's a top nutritionist. He can give you a lot of information about how to improve your cricket through diet.
Okay, definitely looking forward to hearing it then. If you got any questions, feel free to email us at mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycoach@pitchvision.com.
I just also wanted to say that if you want to post any questions or any thoughts you have about anything to do with the podcast or pitchvision.com, we do have a forum on the site. So if you head over to pitchvision.com/forum, you can sign up there and put your thoughts on there. So don't forget to do that if you're a fan of the podcast.
No problem. Sounds good. Happy listening. And this is Kevin Sampath from Australia signing off.
And David Hinchin from the UK. Hi, you're listening to the harrowdrive.com podcast. My name's David Hinchliffe, and today I am very lucky to be joined by Dr. John Baratti. Dr. Baratti is a doctor with a specialisation in exercise biology and nutrient biochemistry, which sounds very grand, but that basically just means he knows a hell of a lot more than I do about nutrition. is that right, JB?
Yeah, that's about right.
Pretty much.
The scientific terms blow everybody away, so I just pretty much say that I study exercise, I study nutrition, how they interact, and how people can get the best results with them.
Fantastic, yeah. And you do that to quite a high level of sports performance, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, I've been fortunate enough that during my master's training, after my undergraduate degree, I was able to start working with some high-level Olympic athletes.
Uh-huh.
As a result of my work with them, word spread, and I ended up working, you know, at least nowadays, I work with about 8 different Olympic teams, some professional mm-hmm. sports teams in the U.S. and Canada,
yeah,
and also a number of NCAA programs in the U.S.
And you've also written 5 books, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I've written a number of books, you know, ranging from books for high-level athletes down to recreational exercisers who just want to look better and feel better.
The book that's most interested me is the Precision Nutrition Course.
Right.
The complete guide. That seemed like the one that was going to be best for the kind of people who would be listening to the Harrow Drive podcast. Would that be right in your mind?
Oh yeah, I completely agree. And in fact, the Precision Nutrition story is actually an interesting one.
Uh-huh.
Basically, in about 2001, I was contracted by the Canadian Olympic cross country ski team,
right,
to develop a nutritional program for them.
Uh-huh.
And so what I did is I developed this program, and I called it Precision Nutrition.
Yeah.
And it's a program that we rolled out over the course of about 5 years. So we worked with developmental athletes, and we sort of worked them right up through the ranks of, you know, precise, optimal nutrition. And we sent them to the Olympics in 2006, and this was for Team Canada, and they got a couple of medals, and it was actually the most successful year in cross-country skiing for Canada in history.
Amazing.
And as a result of this program, you know, again, like I said, word spread about what I did, and we started using precision nutrition with a lot of teams.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing that developed was that we kept getting information back from these athletes saying, hey, not only is this working great for me, but I have friends, I've got family who have all started using the principles.
Yeah.
And getting great results too. So they're losing fat, gaining lean mass, feeling better, looking better, the, you know, body comp's better, health's better, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we decided that it was about time to create a program for, you know, everyone else to use. So what we did was we called it Precision Nutrition also. We put up a website at precisionnutrition.com.
Uh-huh.
And we started offering the same principles that we were offering to our elite athletes with recreational people who, like I said, just want to look better, feel better, and have a better health profile.
That's what I like about it. You can apply it across the board, and with a lot of people, I think, you know, they have aims across the board like that. You know, everybody wants to look better, and everybody wants to use as many tools as they can to play cricket better. Everyone listening to this should be anyway. So you've got it across the board, and that's what I like about precision nutrition. I think nutrition is very underrated in cricket circles generally, especially at a more recreational level. How would you sell the importance of it to somebody who was open to that idea but wasn't doing anything about it at the moment?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the idea behind good nutrition goes beyond just improving sport performance.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I talk about the idea of what good nutrition is, most people think of, you know, whether it's, you know, being better at sport or losing fat or gaining muscle, but these are just small single outcomes rather than the big picture of what good nutrition really is.
Right.
From my estimation, good nutrition is based on accomplishing three things simultaneously.
Right.
It's helping your body, you know, or helping your body change so that it contains the most efficient amount of lean mass,
mm-hmm.
and the least amount of fat mass.
Right.
Okay, and that's definitely sport specific and goal specific.
Yeah.
And that's what most people think of with nutrition.
When you say lean mass, by the way, sorry to interrupt you there, but when you say lean mass, what do you mean by that, just for people who are not sure on that term?
Yep, lean mass basically in many senses means muscle mass. So
okay.
If you think of your body as having, you know, lean mass, which is everything that's not fat,
yeah.
and fat mass, which is everything that is fat,
right.
we've got muscle, we've got bone, we've got water content, that makes up lean mass.
Okay.
So for individuals, you know, to optimize sport performance, they obviously want good strong bone mass, good strong mm-hmm. muscle mass, and less excess or no excess fat beyond what's absolutely needed, you know, for general health.
Yeah.
Now, you know, taking it one more step, though, good nutrition also means optimal health, and that's where a lot of recreational sport people, you know, or that's how they sort of come into learning about good nutrition. You know, we're talking about keeping your blood levels in check.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about all the different health parameters, which includes sort of living successfully into age, even.
Yeah.
When we look at how a lot of people age, they typically a lot of lean mass, a lot of muscle and bone. And what we're talking about with good nutrition is preventing this loss over time.
Okay.
And then the last thing is just feeling good. You know,
yeah.
we have in you know, sort of where I'm at in North American culture, but this is spreading throughout Europe as well, we're seeing more and more deficiencies in certain nutrients.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm talking about here, you know, in the past, when we thought of deficiency, we thought of, you know, vitamin C deficiency and scurvy. So people's teeth and hair would fall out. And, you know, you think of, like, pirates and stuff like that, and they're scurvy, right?
Yeah.
But nowadays, we're seeing deficiencies that aren't quite as bad in terms of, you know, just straight-up hair falling out, teeth falling out. But we're showing low levels of certain vitamins, certain minerals, certain essential fats like fish oil. In fact, in the UK right now, they're doing a bunch of really great progressive studies looking at supplementation with vitamins and with essential fats,
uh-huh.
which we call omega-3 fatty acids that we get from fish.
Yep.
And these studies are looking at giving these supplements to grade school children, and to even prisoners. I mean, sort of an odd comparison, but what they're showing is that in both populations, there's a significant reduction in violent behavior and an improvement of, you know, what we commonly discuss as ADD or ADHD.
Yeah.
So in both populations, cognitive test scores go up, attention spans are better, and there's less violent behavior. So what we're finding is that when we're deficient in these essential fats and certain vitamins and minerals, these types of problems get worse. So people can't concentrate as well, there's cognitive decline, and even a higher incidence of violent incidents. And when we supplement with these things or prevent this deficiency, those things get better. So, I mean, anyone listening in, whether they're a sport athlete or not, whether they care about seeing their abs or not, can definitely appreciate the fact that when you have certain deficiencies, mood, behavior, and mental status change. And when we fix these things with simple nutritional interventions, we can improve all those things.
Well, exactly. I couldn't agree more. And you know, as you say, it applies in everyday life as well as when you're playing sport.
Yeah, and you know, so we're looking at, when we talk about optimal or ideal nutrition, we're looking at, you know, not only improving the body itself, how it looks externally, but we're talking about improving the mind, stabilizing energy levels throughout the day, and all that kind of stuff. And you know, when it comes to recreational sports, there's no question that having enough fuel throughout the day, having the right mental outlook, supports sporting endeavors, whether it's at a high level or whether it's at a recreational level.
Yeah.
And so there's no question, whether it's everyday life or whether it's, you know, competing in a particular sport, optimizing nutrition helps tremendously in many ways.
And that optimization is tied in quite closely to your 10 habits that I've seen on your website. That's kind of the basis of everything, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the habits, you know, I actually wrote the article, the original article, back in the day, and what I was referring to was I was sort of drawing a parallel between Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Right.
And 7 Habits of Highly Effective Nutrition Plans.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the habits sort of then grew over time, and I ended up with 10. It's a nice round number, and there were a couple habits that I thought were really essential that people were missing out on with just the 7. But the habits basically form the foundation of good eating.
Yeah.
You know, for those people who want to read more about this, they can come over to my site and look up the habits.
Yeah.
But I mean, for right now, I'd like to touch on actually 5 of them, which are sort of the food-based habits.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
And these habits, basically, they help you decide what to eat and how often to eat every day.
Uh-huh.
Because when we look at, you know, eating properly, we're looking at 3 things. We're looking at eating the right amount, we're looking at eating the right things, and we're looking at eating at the right time.
Right.
And the habits help govern or direct all 3. So the first habit is sort of a timing habit.
Okay.
And this habit is eat every 2 to 4 hours throughout the day.
Uh-huh.
And so that's sort of habit number 1, eating frequently, eating every 2 to 4 hours. Now, there's a lot of reasons for doing this.
Yeah.
The metabolism speeds up. It provides essential nutrients to the body in sort of a controlled and delivered way over the course of the day. Energy levels remain constant throughout the day. So there's a whole bunch of reasons, way more than I could even get into in this call today.
Yeah.
But simply put, you know, this habit sort of is the cornerstone. It's eating every 2 to 4 hours, so it's frequently eating throughout the day.
Okay.
The second habit is then starts to tell you what to eat during each of those meals every 2 to 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing to choose would be a lean protein source.
Okay.
And when we're talking about lean protein, we're talking about a number of lower-fat meats. So, you know, everything from extra lean beef to chicken to turkey to, you know, even some of the more exotic game meats like bison and venison and things like that.
All right.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's on the meat side. Obviously, there's also fish. There's also dairy. And even if you're a vegetarian, there's soy sources as well, or other vegetarian sources.
Okay.
So the idea is every 2 to 4 hours we should be getting a complete lean protein source.
Okay, yep.
And then in terms of, some people usually ask, how much, what's the size? Well, the idea is for men to take a piece or a portion about the size of their palm, mm-hmm. and they're going to have 2 of those, and women would have about 1 of those.
Right.
So one of their own palm-sized portions. And so there's your protein intake. So now we know we've got to eat every 2 to 4 hours.
Yep.
We know that we should have a lean, complete protein source and on our plate, and then, we know what size that should be. So already we have some of our plate filled up.
Okay.
The next thing to do is to make sure that you've got about 2 servings of fruits and vegetables with each meal or feeding time.
Okay.
Now, with the fruits and vegetables, it's absolutely critical, and I keep trying to spread the message because, over in North America right now, when we look at how many people are getting the very minimum recommendation of 3 to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, we find that about 95 to 98% of the population don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly the same here. Yeah.
Yeah, so we know that that these things are essential. We know that 3 to 5 is very minimum, in fact.
Yeah.
But we know that most people are getting it. So I keep sort of banging the drum about fruits and vegetables. And, the idea or the simple way to get this done is that if you're eating every 2 to 4 hours,
yeah.
you've got to get your 2 servings.
Yeah.
And a serving is about 1/2 cup chopped. Or, one piece of fruit, for example.
Okay.
And in terms of green leafy vegetables, it would be a full cup. So, again, I don't need people measuring everything out. But, no. You should shoot for those ranges.
Yeah, I mean, most people can judge how much a cup is without,
Yeah.
Without actually having a cup.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so, the thing is, it's going to be fruit and vegetable intake is going to round out our protein. It's going to help prevent a high acid state in the body. And I've written an article about that that's on my website that a lot of people, I think, would enjoy reading.
Yeah.
And the article is talking about how our diets nowadays are very high in in acid.
Yeah.
So acidic foods can actually break down our muscles and bones over time. So the idea is that we have to balance out these acidic foods with basic foods.
Okay.
Fruits and veggies are the most basic.
Okay.
And then moving along, the third habit, if you will, is to, or I'm sorry, the fourth habit, because we have eat every 2 to 4 hours.
Yep.
Protein with every feeding.
Mm-hmm.
Fruits and vegetables with each.
Yeah.
And then the fourth would be getting good fats with each meal. Now, when I talk about getting good fats, about things like polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats,
uh-huh.
these come from foods like flaxseed oil, olive oil, avocados, fish oil, these types of things.
Okay.
So usually I just say that for the optimal balance of fat, if you're getting the animal fat from your protein sources,
uh-huh.
and you add in these other things, again, flax, fish, olive, avocados, things like that, every day.
Okay.
You'll be balancing out your fats properly.
Okay.
And then the last thing would be, and this is probably the most important for those who are interested in losing body fat or shifting their body composition towards more lean. And this habit is probably the most effective I've ever seen at doing that.
Yep.
In terms of one simple habit. And the idea is that if you're going to eat starchy carbohydrates,
yep.
so things like potatoes, rice, pastas, breads,
uh-huh.
hopefully you're going to choose the whole grain, unprocessed sources.
Yep.
And if you're going to eat them, save them for the 1 to 2 hours after exercise.
Okay.
So the whole idea is that you have to kind of earn your bread.
Right.
So
yep.
if you've exercised, then including these different carbohydrate sources is good within the 1 to 2 hours after.
Yep.
But the rest of the day, just focus on the other nutrients we talked about. So good proteins, good fats, fruits and vegetables. By doing this and following these first 5 habits,
Yeah.
I've seen people tremendously change their body composition without worrying about counting calories and all this other stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I can speak from personal experience because I've followed those rules myself and it's worked for me. So it's definitely got a personal recommendation from me there, if that means anything.
That's great, and it's good to hear that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's in part why we even created the Precision Nutrition Online Forums. So we have over, you know, it's about 18,000 members now from all over the world who are, you know, Precision Nutrition members, Precision Nutrition customers who come on and, you know, they show their pictures and they talk about their results and stuff like that. So, I mean, we know that we've, you know, that these habits really drive success in people. And some of the cooler stories come from individuals who, you know, have gone to their physician with high cholesterol or high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes and have come back after following Precision Nutrition. And not only do they look better, but a number of these conditions are significantly improved, in some cases even completely eliminated, and they've gone off meds and things like that. So again, the idea goes beyond the simple vanity sake of better seeing your abdominals or losing fat wherever. It speaks directly to the health benefits and even, like I said earlier, the mental and performance benefits.
Absolutely. And by the way, all the links that we've talked about here, the forum, the Precision Nutrition, everything that we're mentioning in the podcast, you can get from the notes on harrowdrive.com. So anyone who's listening who wants to check any of these things out, just have a look at harrowdrive.com to get that information. I want to move on a little bit. That was the five things that you wanted to mention, which is fantastic information. Wanted to move things on a little bit, just to try and bring in a little bit more specific information towards cricket. One of the questions that I get asked a lot about is eating on match day.
Right.
And the reason I get asked that a lot is because it's cricket is unique in the way that it's set out, that the games last a very long time. So it's very difficult to eat right, if you see what I mean.
For sure.
Because you could be, a usual in a recreational game, you might be playing on a Saturday afternoon. You might not do anything for 2 or 3 hours because your team is batting, and then you might have to be called upon then to run around for a couple of hours, or it might be the other way around. Or it might be you right from the first moment to right to the last moment of the game you're involved. So there's a big variation in what people do. Traditionally, what people have done is they take the approach that it's an endurance sport because it lasts so long, which I don't fully agree with, because it's basically a power-based sport in terms of you have to hit, you have to sprint, you have
exactly.
And there's a lot of standing around. But you don't need a lot of endurance to stand up. So there's a lot of standing around or walking, and there's not a lot of endurance involved necessarily. Traditionally what people have done is they maybe sort of the night before, you know, they have a great big plate of pasta or something like that, to top up or whatever they call it, and then in the morning of the game they'll do something similar. And then between innings, because there's only 2 innings, between innings they'll have sort of one of those traditional cricket, English-type cricket teas, which you may have seen. You know, it's all sandwiches and cakes and buns. So it's probably not optimal for the average cricketer. So where would you start with someone who comes to you and says, right, look, you know, I have this problem where where I'm active can vary throughout the day. What do I do? How do I get the most amount of energy available to me at exactly the right time?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating, you know, situation, and I think I try and make it simple as possible. It's very like, I'll draw the analogy between golf and cricket in this sense.
Yeah.
In that often golfers will be out, they'll be playing golf, you know, for a long day.
Yeah.
And they'll be, you know, walking between holes or riding carts. So, I mean, it's actually a long event.
Yeah.
But it's not an endurance event.
No.
And I agree with you in the sense that cricket is not an endurance event. And the whole idea behind loading up on a carbohydrate meal the night before or the morning before, it's based on sort of very old-school nutrition advice.
Yeah.
Completely centered around improving performance for running a marathon, riding a stage race in a tour,
yeah,
or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And obviously every cricket athlete knows that they're not very similar at all.
No, exactly.
And, you know, it's something that's important to note with sports nutrition in general is a bit about the history of sport nutrition.
Yeah.
And sport nutrition, essentially, I mean, I'm simplifying here,
yeah,
but was started when scientists, you know, could start looking at what's inside the muscle and relate that to laboratory measures of performance.
Mm-hmm.
So a great example of that would be if we put someone on a treadmill and we have them run until they can't run anymore, so they fall right off the back.
Yeah.
What will improve their performance? And that's the most basic measure of how something may impact sport performance because it was a very simple test.
Yeah.
You know, you have a laboratory, you have a treadmill, you put them on that treadmill, you run until they fall off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an analogy for sports, although it doesn't match up with every sport.
No, of course.
And then what happened is when scientists had the opportunity to start taking muscle biopsies, where they could take a small chunk of muscle and measure what's in it.
Right.
They found that if you gave people a very high carbohydrate meal and the amount of carbohydrate in their muscle was very high,
mm-hmm,
then they would run a little bit longer when you ran them on the treadmill until they fell off.
Right, yeah.
So the whole idea here was that sports nutrition was founded on this premise, and sports nutritionists only knew this information early on. And, you know, now finally we're starting to learn about optimal nutrient needs for strength and power sports. But we have generations of, you know, studies just based on endurance sport.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why the old advice was to load up on pasta or carbs the night before, load up in the morning, and then hopefully you last throughout your game.
Yeah.
Because no one knew what the needs of a strength and power athlete actually were.
Right.
So nowadays we're learning this information a little better. And we know that in some cases, the very high carbohydrate meals can actually sort of lower or impair power performance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that work? Well, you know, with a very high carbohydrate meal, a few extra pounds are stored in the muscle as fluid. For each gram of carbohydrate you eat, it actually stores 3 to 4 grams of water.
Right.
So for some athletes, let's say, for example, they have to make a certain weight class, or they have to keep their weight within a certain range,
yeah,
or even just for optimal performance, they don't want to be any heavier.
No.
Doing a carbohydrate load is actually problematic.
Okay.
The other thing is that with these very high carbohydrate meals, there could be fairly large swings in blood sugar. So when you eat a very high carbohydrate meal, a lot of the hormone called insulin is released.
Right.
And that insulin drives all the carbohydrates into the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
But those carbohydrates being driven into the muscle and that insulin actually lower the amount of carbohydrates in your blood. And anyone who's ever gone for 4 or 5 hours without eating knows very well that you start to get hungry, you start to get irritable, mm-hmm, and you start to get into a bad mood.
Yeah.
That mood and that irritability is related to the low blood sugar that your body's experiencing. That feeling of low energy has nothing to do with the carbohydrate in your muscle, and it has everything to do with the amount of carbohydrate in your blood.
Right.
Now, it only takes a small amount of carbohydrate to keep your brain happy in that sense and keep you alert.
Yeah.
In fact, it's just a couple of grams. So if you were talking about something like Gatorade or a soda or,
yeah,
a pop,
yeah,
you'd only need about 1 to 2 sips to keep your brain happy from carbohydrates.
Okay.
So the idea behind loading up on carbs you know, it actually can create a very negative performance effect by lowering blood sugar. And, you know, simply put, you don't need all those carbohydrates. So the strategy for athletes who, you know, regardless of their sport, have long days of competition is this.
Yeah.
Following the sort of habits outlined by the precision nutrition leading up to the event would obviously be sound, but then the night before, even the morning of, continuing to eat the same foods that they've been eating all along to get them there.
Yeah.
So normally I just say the basis for strength and power athletes' pre-game meal is the same as every other time, and the sort of the mandate is to not screw it up by eating a bunch of different foods, a bunch of weird foods that may actually cause you gastrointestinal distress.
Right.
Then, maintain blood sugar, because that is the most important thing during competition to keep yourself feeling energetic, strong, capable of performing, is to simply sip on a very dilute carbohydrate-type beverage throughout the day and eat frequent snacks. So one thing that I have my athletes do in particular is to make their own homemade precision nutrition energy bars.
Right.
So in precision nutrition, we have you know, about a dozen recipes for these bars.
Yeah.
Things you can make at home, cut up into squares, you know, wrap it in a Ziploc baggie or in some foil, and then you just pull it out every 2 to 3 hours and just have a couple of bites for a snack.
Okay.
The other thing that they'd be doing during a competition day is sipping on, like I said, a very dilute carbohydrate beverage that actually may even contain some protein as well.
Yeah.
So the simplest way to make such a drink is to fill up a liter bottle of water, put in a tiny bit of Gatorade or some carbohydrate powder.
Yeah. Lucozade we have over here.
And then sip it throughout the day.
Right.
Like I said, the higher carbohydrate feedings aren't necessarily optimal for doing this, and in fact, you can do without them altogether if you have that carbohydrate provided slowly throughout the day.
Right.
Because if you think about it, by having a liter of diluted carbohydrate and sipping it, it's almost like providing yourself an IV of a very small amount of carbohydrate for the brain.
Yep.
And again, this helps to keep sort of optimal function mental during the competitions. And then, obviously, going an entire day without having any food can become problematic because people just get hungry. So what we like to do is add some snacks that you can bring yourself that have your good fats, that have your good proteins, and then that can lead to better performances and better maintenance of body composition during the course of a season.
So, extending that a little bit, cricket has usually in halfway through the game, there is actually a meal, you know. So, in that time, would you say that meal would be, you know, sticking with the rules that you've outlined?
Yeah, I would say that would be optimal. But you know, I've been an athlete in multiple sports.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes when you're traveling, you're sort of at the mercy of the choices that are provided to you.
Of course.
And so, you know, I always say with precision nutrition, we've got two facets. One is creating a perfect plan, and the other is making that plan work in the real world.
Of course,
So this is sort of a real world situation where you're going to be provided with snacks. The idea is sort of to get through that sort of situation so that you're doing better than you might have otherwise. Is to make sure that, you know, potentially you choose some of the, you know, higher protein selections if they're actually available.
Yep.
And if not, bring your own.
Yeah.
That might mean making a protein shake to supplement the food that's provided for you. Again, it may be supplementing the food that's provided for you with some additional, you know, protein bars that you may bring or something like that. But the idea is to always be prepared. And, you know, my Olympic athletes are sort of a great study in this.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes they're on the road away from home for 4 months at a time. They're staying at different hotels throughout the world. They are traveling between these hotels in planes, trains, and automobiles, and it's just a hectic time where they don't necessarily have open access to all of the foods that they have at home.
No.
And for these athletes, the idea is, hey, you're going to be faced with a bunch of foods that don't really fit into your plan. that could degrade your health and your body composition and your performance. So it's not that you have to avoid all these foods.
No.
Because in fact, there's not really such a thing as a really bad food that you should never eat.
No.
But the reality is there are some foods that if you eat them more frequently can have a negative consequence. So what we do is we just try and minimize those. And the best way to make sure that you don't eat too much of them is to be prepared with all the other healthy foods. And you're not starving when these other foods are put in front of you.
That's very interesting. And what about with when you get the situation where you can be standing around literally doing nothing, you know, when there are times when you're not even on the field, you know, it can be anything up to 2-3 hours where nothing's happening. Would you just keep things, you know, ticking over with the small sips, or would you of the drink, or would you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think during long matches, the idea is to, you know, not only with the drinks to provide energy, but to also provide hydration. That's another thing that a lot of athletes kind of forget about, and sometimes we take for granted on my level in terms of sort of expert advice, because we figure everyone knows now that we have to drink a lot of fluid during sport performance.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, some athletes still do forget that. Some of them, as they're competing, their thirst mechanisms aren't as strong as others,
no.
And they just don't drink as much. So the idea would be that these drinks that you're preparing for your matches would actually both serve to provide energy
And
to provide hydration.
Yeah.
So the idea is to make sure it's dilute enough that you're not getting a ton of calories. And again, like I said, the brain only needs a very small amount of carbohydrate.
Yeah.
So you're going to think of this as sort of a rehydration drink plus a bit of an energy drink. And so then you should be able to sip this throughout the entire day to ensure good hydration and good blood glucose levels.
That brings me on quite nicely, actually, to a question from a reader regarding drinking, hydration, and that kind of thing. So I want to split that into two, really. First of all, do you have any recommendations for how much people should be drinking just in a normal day, throughout the day? And also, does that change on a day when they're playing cricket?
Yeah. Well, the typical recommendations for the amount of fluid we should be drinking are based on a couple of things. They're based on climate, they're based on sporting activity, how much you sweat, all that kind of thing. Now, usually I say a safe bet for total fluid consumption during a normal day in a sort of a normal non-humid climate would be somewhere between 1 to 2 liters of fluid per day.
Okay.
That's sort of optimal. Now, we obviously get, or maybe it's not so obvious to everyone, some fluid from the foods we eat.
Yep.
So there's a bit of fluid coming in that way, but I think a good rule of thumb is about 1 to 2 liters per day of plain water. For your average fluid needs.
Yeah.
Now, for sporting activities, the human body can lose, and I've seen a wide range, but typically we see about, you know, 1.5 to 2 liters per hour of sporting activity lost in terms of sweat and fluid.
Yeah.
In fact, there's an individual, I think the highest ever recorded sweat rate was by an individual named Alberto Salazar, who held the record in the marathon for a while, which he won in Boston. And I think he was losing about 8 to 9 pounds during the course of each hour of the marathon.
Wow.
So he was sweating at a much higher rate.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of liters, that would be somewhere around 4 liters of water per hour he was losing.
Right. Gosh.
So with that said, I mean, the average person in a sport like cricket would probably not lose any more than 0.5 to 1 liter of fluid an hour. So that sort of basically assigns an amount of fluid that you can match to your performance.
Right.
So if you're out there, it's a hot day and you're sweating, probably about 500 milliliters to 1 liter of fluid would be necessary for fluid replacement.
Right.
And then you would just match that up based on how many hours you're out there. If it's not that hot and if there's not a high sweat rate, then you could drink less.
Okay.
So again, you almost want to, cover your basic needs outside of sport, 1 to 2 liters a day. And then during sport, you look for consuming anywhere from about 250 all the way up to 1 liter of fluid per hour based on how much you're sweating.
Okay. A lot of times it's very difficult to replace fluid while you're actually playing.
Right.
So depending on whether you can stomach it or not, I suppose, would you recommend drinking a certain amount before going out to play to try and keep it going?
It's a good question, and the challenge with fluid and rehydration is that the body can probably only absorb about 1 liter to 1.5 liters of fluid per hour.
Right.
So if you were before a match or whatever your sport is, go out and drink about 1 liter.
Yeah.
That's probably about all you could tolerate.
Yeah,
and about all you could replace over the course of the next hour or so.
Right, okay.
So at that point, you'd want to just kind of do your best hydrating leading up to the event.
Yeah.
Maybe top off right before the event.
Yeah.
And then try and periodically throughout the day get as much fluid as you can.
Yeah, yeah. It's harder for some than other because some people are able to because of the nature of the game. Some people can get off the field and some can't. So it does vary quite a lot. But you can go 2 or 3 hours without being able to rehydrate. So
that's probably fine.
Yeah.
Assuming that the activity isn't tremendously high.
No.
And that it's not really, really hot and humid out there.
Yeah.
But, people have done it in the past, and they haven't had any really severe consequences.
No.
But the bottom line is, the better hydrated you can stay, the better your performance is going to be. I mean, there's clear studies showing that both endurance and strength activity is impaired by dehydration. And, they're not small decreases in performance either. With endurance activity, it's a couple percent loss in performance. And the same with strength. I think I've seen up to 6 or 8% reduction in muscle strength and power during dehydration.
So the bottom line really is get as much as you can, as often as you can, really.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Another question from another reader is to do with snacks. So seeing as we were talking about snacks during match day, but just snacks generally, making sure you eat every few hours.
Yes.
We've talked about the bars in the precision nutrition system. Is there any other sort of quick, easy snacks that spring to mind for the type of thing that somebody can eat easily?
Well, typically, a lot of the normally chosen snack foods, you can get the job done, but they're usually too high in sugar, too low in protein, and things like that.
Okay.
Now, if, someone forgets to make their own bar or forget to bring some nutrient shakes which contain some protein and things like that.
Uh-huh.
A lot of athletes have used fruits, a lot of athletes have used granola bars, things like that.
Yeah.
They're certainly better than nothing. But if we had to rank a bit of a hierarchy, we'd look to things like, homemade protein bars, which contain a little bit of carbohydrate and good fats and protein energy.
Uh-huh.
We look to things like, fruits and vegetables for snacks.
Yeah.
We might even throw in a protein shake or something like that in there. Obviously, sipping the beverage that I mentioned can do a great job.
Uh-huh.
And then, for less desirable choices, things like granola bars and snacks like that can work. The idea is you want pretty quickly digested, simple foods.
Yeah.
That aren't going to sort of bog down your stomach, make you feel uncomfortable while you're trying to perform.
Yeah. When it comes to deciding what you're going to eat in a pinch, it's better to have something than nothing. It's better to go for, some kind of protein, and if you can, some kind of vegetable or fruit as well.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly, okay. Speaking of vegetables, One of the things you emphasise a lot is, make sure you get vegetables every time you eat. That's always been a difficult one for me. This is a personal one for me. This has always been a difficult one for me for breakfast.
Yes.
Do you have any... fruit is easy for breakfast, but vegetables not really as much. Have you got any tips for that?
Well, the typical thing that, someone using precision nutrition might eat for breakfast is sort of like an omelette with vegetables in it.
Right.
So it might be an asparagus or spinach and feta cheese, or there might be tomatoes or peppers, things like that. So that's kind of a fairly common type of omelet for breakfast, in which you'd have some egg whites, maybe some whole eggs, and a bunch of vegetables included. So that's sort of one strategy. The other one, I mean, there's a whole number of things you can do. You know, some of my athletes actually prefer to eat meat for breakfast, which, you know, not everyone considers as sort of a normal thing to do.
Nope.
But in that case, they might have a salad, or they might have chopped up carrots, peppers, and things like that on the side.
Yeah.
Another thing that some of my athletes will use, the ones who don't necessarily need to lose fat, that's not as important a goal to them, you know, they may have something like, you know, oatmeal for breakfast or porridge with, you know, some protein added, some berries added.
Uh-huh.
And one thing we do is, as a vegetable supplement, we include, you know, something called Greens Plus.
Oh, right, yeah, I've seen that. We can't get that over here is a problem with that. But, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so over here with what, you know, there's a number of greens formulas, which are basically sort of the protein equivalent to the vegetable family.
Right.
So it's sort of like isolated, powdered vegetables.
Right, okay.
And obviously, they're not as good as whole vegetable choices.
No.
But again, in a pinch, thrown into some water, not a bad solution to ensure you're getting your antioxidants and vitamins and minerals, etc.
Yeah, okay. So there are ways. There are ways. There was a question about oatmeal, oats and that kind of thing. I think you've answered that already. It was somebody who has oats in the evening, but I suppose your answer to that, I probably could answer this for you. I suppose your answer to that would be that if it's in the 1 to 2 hours after they've exercised, then go for it. But otherwise, avoid it in the evening. Would that be about right?
Yeah. That's a fairly accurate assessment. I think the one thing I always try and emphasize is that the 1 to 2 hours post-exercise rule is one that's most important for those people who want to lose fat.
Uh-huh.
For individuals who are more of an ectomorphic body type, which is basically described as being not necessarily lean, but thin, if you saw them, you might think that they'd be well adapted for an endurance type activity. Now, they can be, I mean, I've seen ectomorphs who have a little bit of extra body fat, but normally an ectomorph is characterized by sort of long, thin joints and long, thin limbs.
Yeah.
So in the ectomorphic type, or in the individual who wants to or needs to gain lean mass or muscle mass, we say they can be a little bit more liberal with the carbohydrate time.
Okay.
So outside of the 1 to 2 hours, they can include these types of foods, higher carbohydrate meals, although still we encourage them to focus on more of their carbohydrates after exercise.
Yeah.
Now, for those who have to lose body fat, so this would be individuals with high body fat percentage, individuals who are more endomorphic,
right,
which is usually described as sort of wider pear or apple shaped, carrying more body fat, these individuals we try and keep pretty strict to the carbohydrate timing rules.
Okay, so it can vary. There's a certain amount of individualization going on there.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question is about fish. I think I've seen there's certain types of fish that you say probably should be eaten in moderation. I suppose it's the same with all food, really, but. A question I got was, you know, is there any particular type of fish that should be avoided, or any particular type of fish that should be chosen over other types? Do you go?
Sure.
Is there that much detail that you go into?
Well, I mean, we talk a little bit about the inclusion of fish in the diet as being something that's important, partly for the reason I mentioned earlier, which is the inclusion of healthy fats, which are fish oil.
Yeah.
The omega-3 fats, particularly the DHA and EPA, which are components of fish oil or the fat found in fish, these types of things can only be found in you know, the oils that come from fish. So in part, you know, the inclusion of these types of foods in the diet is beneficial, so we can get more of these healthy fats. And, you know, there's good information showing that these fats help reduce the risk of certain cancers and heart disease, improved mental function, improved body composition. In fact, the fish oils, the EPA and DHA, in a study that I did during my PhD work, showed to increase the metabolism by about 400 calories a day. So there's all these really interesting benefits associated with the fish oils.
Okay.
Now, that's partly why we recommend fish be included periodically. However, there's a bit of a conflict because nowadays a lot of the marine sources, the fish and you know, the sort of marine sources of dietary intake, these foods can sometimes be high in things like mercury and some environmental pollutants. So the recommendation nowadays is moving more away from a high intake of fish and more towards a very moderate intake of fish with the inclusion of supplemental fish oil in the diet because these fish oils are purified.
Okay.
So that's what a lot of experts nowadays recommend, a moderate intake of fish.
And what would moderate
oil for the very beneficial things?
What would you say a moderate intake would be in terms of, you know, times per week, say?
Yeah, well, I would say probably a couple times a week, so up to 4 or 5 servings of fish a week is probably okay.
Yeah.
Now, there are some individuals who are more sensitive to dietary mercury intake and dietary pollutant intake, and in these individuals it should be lower, and typically there'll be symptoms, and it'll take their working with their physician to figure out who they are. Right. However, you know, again, I'm kind of cautious with my recommendation, and personally, I stick to, you know, 3 servings or less a week, and that's just because I'm particularly sensitive to the issue.
Okay.
I think that certain populations who are getting fish that may be less polluted could eat it more frequently, but the fish that I have access to typically is a little bit, or known for being a little bit higher in these types of environmental pollutants.
Okay. And then supplement with fish oil that you would buy in capsules or from a bottle or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you're looking for a fish oil that contains a high amount of EPA and DHA, the old cod liver oil doesn't necessarily fit the bill.
Okay.
You're looking for oils that come from fish like salmon, mackerel.
Yeah.
Manhattan. Krill oil is a new one.
Yeah.
So these are anchovy, sardine. These are all some of the fish oils that contain the high EPA and DHA content.
Well, I think that just about covers most of the questions I've had from the readers. And we've covered pretty much everything that I wanted to go with you related to both generally speaking about nutrition and also trying to get a little bit more specific to cricket. So I just want to remind everyone who's listening that all the links to everything that we've talked about today, JB's site, the forums, the 10 habits, the precision nutrition system, everything is going to be on the harrowdrive.com website, so you can peruse those at your leisure. And I think that's just about covers everything in the time that we've got today. So thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
Fantastic to speak to you. I've been looking forward to it for a while. So thank you very much for that. And,
excellent. Well, thanks for inviting me to come on and to talk about nutrition in general. Nutrition for cricket is definitely an interesting topic.
Fantastic, and hopefully it's motivated a few people to get their nutrition sorted out.
Yeah.